My name is Joe McGilley. I'm the founder of Peace One Day. You're listening to the Social Media Week Glasgow podcast.
Sports use of Twitter grew, so now it's a central part of its news gathering, production and marketing strategy. The main challenge has, of course, been ensuring that all of the BBC's tweeters stay on message. And if you read some of the national press, you doubtless will have read some of those occasions when they've gone off message. And they have been awkward moments for those individuals. But we're learning how to try to corral some of that messaging and keep it within what you would call acceptable boundaries. For anyone working in a news editor position in BBC Sport, it's a non-negotiable rule that they have to follow the most important athletes, clubs, governing bodies, etc. And clearly the easiest way to do that is by having a Twitter account. They could just monitor certain pages on Twitter without having an account, and we encourage them to have an account from which to follow the right people. We create a master list of journalists to follow, from which contains all of the most important accounts, and we made that available for our audience to follow if they so choose as well. For our journalists and producers, and from my 2012 perspective, the most important factor in our use of social media as a news gathering tool is verification that what someone else has published is in fact accurate. And I think, looking again towards the Minister, that's something that you would understand very clearly as well. It's almost like sorting the wheat from the chaff. You don't need me to tell you that if you venture onto Twitter, you'll find all manner of conspiracy theories, half-truths, defamations, hoaxes, and, of course, some nuggets which do turn out to be great stories. But I'm going to tell you an example of a recent, fairly bizarre tale which highlights the need for us to do just that sorting of the wheat from the chaff. 2 weeks ago, a rumour circulated on Twitter that the footballer Steve Malbranck had retired from the sport to care full-time for his four-year-old son who was seriously ill. We started to see supportive tweets from former teammates of Malbranck, teammates who you would think knew the circumstances of his family. Not so. BBC Sport checked out the story with Saint-Etienne, Malbranck's club, and with the player's agent. He wasn't retiring to look after his son. He doesn't have a son. He has two daughters, both of whom are absolutely fine. This was Louis Saha's reaction after we wrote the story, assuring people that the Malbranck rumour was nonsense. And you can see quickly how the story turned from being one thing completely into another. Happy to hear there is no health problem with the family of Steve Malbranck. Oof, take care, bro. So a good example there of not just taking Twitter for face grant as you see it. So you hear the question being asked quite a lot about Twitter being the place that news breaks, and that leads then to the question of, do we need traditional media companies anymore? But I would certainly argue that we do need traditional media companies more than ever, because the sheer amount of content that's in that space means it can be hard for the audience to know what's true and what isn't. So that's journalists using Twitter to follow, not necessarily to tweet, and we have a clear strategy around who's allowed to tweet and what they can tweet. We have official tweeters, and their names are on a publicly available list. And these people have a very clear brief, don't say anything on Twitter, which you wouldn't say on BBC One or BBC Five Live, for example. And that doesn't mean that they can't show any personality, it just means judge the boundaries. Anyone on that list is free to use Twitter in a personal capacity, but we refer to them as unofficial tweeters. Now, some of you may have felt it necessary in your Twitter accounts to distance yourself from official views of your employer. And we've actually seen some quite amusing versions of how people have described themselves in this context. A trainee journalist on Twitter satirised our staff with a biography line that read, "These views are mine, not necessarily those of the BBC. I don't even work for the BBC." So social media does really give us a chance to grow our brand, and if you keep a close eye on the type of content that's being retweeted, you'll get a valuable feel for what your audience likes. Sometimes that does actually raise an eyebrow or two, because just before the Rugby World Cup began, my colleague Lewis Wiltshire, who was editor of the BBC Sport website until he moved to the Olympics, sent a tweet which quickly became the most retweeted thing that he had ever tweeted. You might expect it to be some worthy story about something from sport. No, one of Namibia's players once headbutted a lion to get it to release a baboon, and other facts, your guide to RWC teams. So generally, it is actually the more hard-hitting stuff that we try to push out on Twitter, but it can be very effective for swift rebuttals of stories as well. And you can see here that my boss, a story had appeared in the Telegraph about what we were going to do in 2012 in relation to 3D. Before the story actually made the paper, we knew that it was on the website, and we pushed this line out to try to clarify the fact that the story wasn't exactly 100% accurate. So that's an overview of what we do now. You'll be delighted to learn I'm going to come to 2012. But what I'm going to tell you is that we're not actually developing any newfangled, whiz-bang social media products or tools that will stun the world and make millionaires of us all. Rather, our focus is on weaving social media throughout our content and flexing it in ways that we haven't done before and making it far easier for people to share the brilliant moments that are coming their way. This slide will give you an example, an overview of all the things that are happening in 2012. And I can tell you that if you took any one of those things, that by themselves, they would be a major undertaking for the BBC to devote resources to and for us to cover. But when you take all of those things together in one period of 12 months, then there truly is that once-in-a-lifetime year for the BBC and for the UK in terms of events. So we don't see the Olympics as just a sporting event. It's a whole lot more. The BBC is approaching 2012 as that massive year of events. So we have the Olympic and Paralympic torch relay. We have the Cultural Olympiad, better known as Festival 2012. We have the London Mayor elections. We have the Queen's Diamond Jubilee. And of course, yes, we will do a little bit of sport around the Olympics and the Paralympic Games. One of the things that I specifically wanted to mention was the Olympic torch relay, which begins at Land's End on May the 19th. And it will take place over the next 69 days, and it will travel the length and breadth of the UK. Earlier this year, LOCOG, the Games organisers and the torch relay organisers, released the places where the torch will stop overnight. And of course, Scotland has a number of places where the torch will come. The detail of where the torch will go will come before the end of the year. And we think that this is truly a moment when the UK can be brought together through the torch relay as a whole, but there are masses of opportunities for us here to use social media to fulfil that objective of uniting the nation around major events. These are two of our current social media presences on Facebook just now and on Twitter. So we plan to produce a live video stream throughout the relay, and when the video is available to watch later, we want people to be able to home in on a section that's really personal to them. Perhaps they, or as a relative, ran with the torch, and we want them then easily to be able to share that video clip virtually via social media platforms. So can you imagine the joy, perhaps, that somebody in the far north of Scotland might be able to get from seeing their grandchild running with the torch for 300 metres in Southampton? They couldn't make it that far down the country, but the BBC hopefully will be there to bring that moment to them, both live and then virtually, and enable them to share that moment very easily on their chosen social media network. The organisers of Festival 2012 reckon there'll be something like 10 million opportunities for people to take part in events across the UK. So we have quite a lot of potential there too. Social media does give us that potential to get in there. One example might be to repeat the Facebook check-in event that Radio 1 did at their big weekend in Carlisle earlier this year. People checked in front of a particular stage at the event, and the BBC pushed relevant information about the artists on that stage to their Facebook newsfeed. That's something else that we may well do next year. That can then be shared and seen and commented on by their friends. So just think how that kind of thing could work at Radio 1's Hackney Weekend next June. That will be the BBC's biggest ever ticketed event, which is expected to attract some 100,000 people. The experiment in Carlisle went down really well with those taking part. They felt it gave them bragging rights because they were able to push the fact that they were there and their friends weren't. We produced a brilliant high-definition image of the Mall and crowds at the royal wedding earlier this year. That's it there. So how much more easily could we make something like this in 2012? How much more easily could we make it shareable? How do we want people to be able to interact with that? And what issues, such as privacy, might we face in doing so? These are all questions we've been asking and answering. But for me personally, the content is king. It will always come first. The platform is not unimportant, but the platform will always come second. For me, it's about producing the brilliant content and then giving people the ease with which to share that on social media networks. Now, our key digital innovation is the fact that we're aiming to provide 24 video streams of sporting action during the games. The BBC's never done anything of that scale before. And when we talk about legacy, that's one of the areas that we hope will roll on into 2014, which will give the BBC the ability to improve even on the 24 video streams between 2012 and 2014 to enable a spread of live action that we simply have never been able to do before. Think too about how that could flex into something like Tea in the Park, doing things that we haven't done before. Within all of that too, we're looking at placing data overlays over the video. Again, this data would update dynamically, telling you the information about the athletes, about the sport itself. We haven't done that before. We're intending to do that for 2012. So just think too how that could then roll on into other things that happen in Scotland, for an example. But that area where broadcasting and social media meet is being looked at very closely by my sport colleagues. To an extent, BBC Sport have done this via Jake Humphrey using his iPad on the F1 coverage to source live tweets from the audience and at home. But that's still just the view of single, self-selecting individuals. And in a sense, we're just taking an old idea into the digital space. Radio shows across the UK were essentially doing this 20 years ago. You'd hear Rab from Glasgow. I've heard that be Dave from Wolverhampton, but I'm turning it into Rab from Glasgow. Ring up, supposedly representing Partick Thistle supporters, and I can't say Celtic or Rangers. I actually had one of them in here and decided to change that tonight. But he wasn't representing the supporters. He was representing himself. And that's not really of huge editorial value. What we've been trying to look at is, what if we could present during our coverage of London 2012 what everyone in Glasgow thought instantly about a single incident as it happened? What if, when Jessica Ennis wins heptathlon gold for Great Britain, we could discuss in broadcast the fact that 96% of tweets from Sheffield, her hometown, in the last half hour had been all about Jess? What if we could then delve into the overriding emotions of those tweets, perhaps that most people were expressing positive emotions? And what if we displayed on screen a graphical illustration of the trends around the country? So that's just one other area that we're looking at in trying to flex Twitter and make it do different things as part of our 2012 coverage. So in conclusion, we do know that we have a very strong foundation for social media going into the Olympic year. We know that social media will definitely be at the heart of these Olympic Games like never before. Thank you very much for your time.